enjoy a good squeeze.
Hi, I'm Margot.
Hi, I'm August.
And this is A Good Squeeze,
the show where we explore the world of 007.
Yeah.
And how we squeeze a little bit of James Bond into our everyday lives.
That's right. How did we do it this time?
This time, you know, I set the table with Salad Utopia, prime rib en jus, bits of meat, shashlik, and the pièce de résistance, bomba surprise. All from Walmart ingredients.
All right, for the nostalgic, that's a dead giveaway. For the novice, that isn't.
Oh, that means I made something from Diamonds Are Forever.
That's right. What a picture.
What a picture.
Controversial, but
One other little thing of our meal we ate. Yeah, you know, I like to set the table, immerse ourselves, and you know, if there's a particular food item in the movies, I like to attempt to recreate. If there's a specific drink, I like to attempt to recreate that. In this movie, there's a great scene in the finale where, you know, they're presented with all this food presented by the evil henchmen in this film.
Who are in disguise.
In disguise.
For context.
Imagine.
The henchmen aren't automatically just like, yeah, actually, we like you guys.
Yeah, that's true. Imagine Bond's surprise. But, another item we did eat with our bomba surprise was we ate chocolate-covered desert scorpions.
I totally forgot about that. And also, as you were saying scorpions, for some reason, I thought you were going to say squirrel, and I was about to full-heartedly agree with you. I'm like, yeah, yes, we did.
We ate chocolate a squirrel. Chocolate-covered squirrel. Just like in the movie. That's a great scene near the opening of, those same said henchmen. Mr. Wint, Mr. Kid drop a little scorpion down this dentist's back who's like helping them smuggle some diamonds. Mm-hmm. And that stinger gets them real good. And we ate that son of a bitch.
Yes, we did. It was mid. I wouldn't recommend it. It wasn't that good. It's just because it's like chocolate. The chocolate was really good. But then you have bits of shit in there that you just didn't sign up for.
It was scorpion, not shit.
Yeah, we didn't know what was inside of him.
That's true.
He didn't. Do they empty their bowels before putting them in there? No, we don't know that. It's just flaky. Flaky, like I don't know if you put sawdust. Mm-hmm. Not sawdust. Tan bark. Okay. Dipped it in chocolate. And then went as best you could. You know when your lips don't touch when you're chewing something? You know you're just trying to get through it. And that's pretty much what I look like.
Yeah.
Eating that. But everything else was delicious.
The same description could be said about this movie.
For some, that's right. Because it's not a controversial movie, but it is. Wait, real quick, before we move into the movie, into the topic of the honor, I guess. If for those who are active on our social media page who do check it out, you will see a full, rundown of what it looked like, making it, eating it, and the setup and everything. So yeah, it was very lovely, very beautiful.
Yeah.
So hats off to you, Chef August.
And I like to obviously I'm not making the most luxurious meal, as in like ingredient wise. It's like Bond on a budget kind of thing.
Bond on a budget.
So I don't typically shop at Walmart for groceries, but something in my head clicked. I'm like, I'm going to make this elaborate meal from Diamonds Are Forever, making it entirely from ingredients from Walmart.
Yeah.
And I pulled it off. So one could say it was the Equate version.
It was, yeah.
The Great Value version.
It was good, though. Bond on sale, you know? It was absolutely excellent. And I did poke fun at the Bombay Surprise at the end there, but it was very good.
Yeah.
How did you want to just share that recipe real quick?
No.
Okay.
Secret.
Guess. All right.
Make it yourself.
That was a perfect setup. You're like, no. I'm like, all right. Well, here
we go. I don't anyway, want to.
So Diamonds Are Forever. We were fully immersed. We had the meal. We had the drink. What You know, why don't you start us off? Thoughts, feelings,
yeah,
takeaways.
So, you know, I am the nostalgic here, and when it comes to Diamonds Are Forever, in my lifetime, from the first time I saw it till you and I just watched it, I have gone up and down with this movie. I remember when I first saw it, it was another one of those, you know, caught it on TV, 15 Days of 007. I don't have a specific memory of getting it on the old VHS. This wasn't one I watched a lot. There was just something about it when I was younger. I just didn't really care about it. Now, when I had a CD of like all the James Bond theme songs, this was a theme song I listened to quite a bit. I think it's excellent and a classic. This movie really didn't do it for me as a kid. And then when I got older, like into my 20s, even into my late 20s, I don't want to say I hated this movie. I don't hate any of them, but it was definitely bottom of the barrel. It was down there for me. And in the recent years, when I rank my ever-changing list of these James Bond movies, I tend to rank them by enjoyment level and rewatchability. So, like, how often do I watch this film, and am I having a good time while watching it? And more recently, it has been creeping up. It's still low. It's still probably, yeah, it is my least favorite of the Sean Connerys. But over the past few years, there's just been little things that I've been enjoying about it. It is silly. It is goofy. It's one of the goofier, if not the goofiest, of the Bond movies. I don't know.
So, out of curiosity, you're saying that it's slowly been creeping up the list. What's been the determining factor in that? Like, the first time it started making its way up, and then the second time, third, I don't know how many times it... Yeah. Is this consistent, that every time you watch it, you just like it more and more? Or is there something, like,
specific? It is. Every time I watch it, I like it more and more. Because I kind of just have accepted it for what it is. Before, I kind of knocked it for what it was. I don't know. When I was really disliking this movie, I always felt like, oh, Sean Connery looks old and out of shape, and you know, he looks like he doesn't want to be there.
He never really does look in shape, though. Oh, like,
we gotta watch Dr. No again, or Thunderball. Come on.
I don't know. It was a different meaning of in shape back in the day versus now. Like, you know, when you think about what a cut dude looked like back in the 60s versus now, it's a completely different definition. So would I say, you know, drinking, smoking cigarettes, you know, isn't really conducive to like a fucking, sorry, I gotta stop swearing, a built like.
Listen.
Chum, you know.
For you and for those listening, wherever you're at, do yourself a favor, Google Sean Connery holding a sword. I'm going to make sure that is accurate.
And then right after that, Google Daniel Craig Bond. Just what he looked like as a Bond. Shirtless. Daniel Craig, shirtless beach scene, Casino Royale. And then just a side by side. Just do a quick side by side. Who's in shape? Period. Who's in shape? I invite our listeners to indulge in this moment with us. Now, I'm not arguing that he's out of shape, but I wouldn't say he's
so
in shape.
A little more specific. You gotta type in Sean Connery, Mr. Universe, holding a sword. Otherwise, you'll get him old, like holding a Excalibur or something.
Give me here. I want to see.
Look at that stud.
I'll take a look at that.
Look at that stud.
That's him?
Yeah.
That's what he looks like in Doctor No?
It's like a couple years before, but yeah.
Well, come on, my name is Mr. Universe. What are you talking about?
Now that's about 20 years before Diamonds.
He would lose. He would. People would. He would go on now.
He didn't win.
As a joke. Oh well, there's your answer.
he's in shape anyway.
Okay, well, he is in shape, but at the time there in that picture, he is. In general, in the Bond franchise, he's not. He doesn't look like that. He does not look like that. We're looking up, like, Sean Connery as James Bond. Is he, like, in shape? Does he have, like, can you see the veins? No.
You could also look up, for your own pleasure, Sean Connery's Zardoz.
Oh yeah.
That'll.
That's in shape.
That's in shape.
That's in shape.
When he's holding, when he's wearing the nut slinger.
That's right.
But he looks more like that in Diamonds. So yeah, I felt like he was like didn't want to be there, out of shape, mm-hmm. and kind of phoning it in. I don't necessarily feel that way nowadays. The Bond girl, Tiffany Case, I thought she was just like a, like kind of like a dumb character, like a bimbo kind of silly person. And that's kind of, well, that is how she is in like the end of the movie. But I don't know. I kind of like, I like her. I like her character. I like some of the lines she has. And it's just like, I don't know. I've been just enjoying it and letting myself have fun. Whereas when I was in my 20s watching this, like with the critical hat on, I was like, mm-hmm. oh, this is no good. This,
yeah.
this isn't like Skyfall.
And it's definitely not one of those, like when you're a kid and you're watching a Bond film like that, this one specifically isn't necessarily like exciting enough for a kid to be like, even like, even,
yeah,
you know,
you're
it's,
right.
it's a lot of talking. Speaking of a
confusing plot.
Oh my Lord. I don't even know what the movie's about. I'll be honest. We just watched it. I can't give you a beat for beat of like, what the movie is like, what's yeah. the plot. I don't know, there's diamonds and
they're forever,
you know, they're forever. Like the twist is they're, you know, not forever. What's the opposite of forever? Never. Diamonds are never. Every villain is lemons.
That'd be a great Bond title. headed by Blofeld. So essentially the plot of this movie, which is very confusing, and I'm going to try to explain it. It's like multifaceted, so I'll do the short version. Essentially, Blofeld, the main villain, spoiler alert, he is creating the satellite that is made of diamonds, that has a diamond reflector, and he's going to use it to destroy nuclear weapons and basically like sell this weapon, or sell nuclear supremacy to the highest bidder. So like, oh, this country is the highest bidder. I will destroy all the other nuclear weapons. So now they have the only nuclear weapons, essentially. So to get all these diamonds, they have to smuggle them. And there's this big smuggling ring that our Bond girl, Tiffany Case, is involved in, and a couple other characters. They're involved in this diamond smuggling ring. And these henchmen of Blofeld, Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd, they are infiltrated into this diamond smuggling ring, and they are kind of moving the diamonds along and killing anyone who is
gets
a part of it.
Gets in the way.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes. And that's essentially the short version. Bond's involved because MI6, you know, catches wind of this plot. And
they just have a guy on top of a tower with binoculars looking for bad guys. They caught wind of it. And they're like, wait a minute.
You smell that?
Yeah.
smells like trouble. That'd be Felix.
Smells like a lot of diamonds. Yeah. As soon as you said satellite, you lost me. As soon as it's like,
that was my first
world,
sentence.
We're going to poison the water system. I'm like, ah, all right. Yeah. Okay.
So to your point, though, and I think that is why I didn't go for this movie that much as a kid, it is not the most exciting. Doesn't have very many, if any, like memorable action scenes. It has a cool car stunt, but the car chase is kind of whatever.
And there is a continuity error.
Oh, yeah.
During
that. We'll touch on that specifically later. You know, for me, I don't know if I registered this as a kid. Maybe I did. You know, it takes place in America. It's in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe I just didn't find that, like, all, like globe-trotting, like, exciting.
Right.
I'm sure me as a 7-year-old really thought that. And then, you know, yeah, there's just nothing too iconic other than the theme song in this movie that, like, transcends the genre. Now, there is some key stuff in this movie that I put, like, if there's 25 of these movies, you know, I put that in, like, my top 10. Mm-hmm. And I would put Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd top 10 henchmen. And
they were the inspiration for two bad guys in Codename Kids Next Door.
Yes.
What are their names again?
Mr. Something,
but it's a tall, skinny old dude and a short, fat old dude, and they hang out together, and they, I think they have, like, suits, and they try to do something. God, I don't remember, but they both have glasses, right? Or at least one of them has glasses.
Yeah, one does, and the other one has, like, a big hair that covers his
eyes. Yes, yeah, there we go. Oh, and the horns, right?
Yeah, Mr. Wink and Mr. Fib.
There we go. That's, let me show them.
That looks just like them, too, a little bit. Very inspired.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're like a walrus and like a bison, essentially.
For some reason.
Is what they look like.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's like a deeper meaning to this. But,
it inspired these henchmen, which inspired this character for this kid's cartoon. And I remember, you know what?
But that is a very MI6, like, that's Codename Kids Next Door. Like, they are very much like, you know, get your battle ready armor. Like, you know, they've got all the gear. They've got all the stuff. They've got numbers. Like, you know, it's not 007. It's number one, number two, number three, number four, whatever. Mm-hmm. Onward. But yeah, it's weird to think about how Bond inspired that whole show is. But we'll do that. We'll touch on that another day.
Yeah. You know, I saw this movie before Kids Next Door even came out.
Yeah.
And I believe those two, Mr. Wink and Mr. Fib, are in episode one. So when that show debuted, I remember watching it and being like, oh, that's like those guys from Diamonds Are Forever.
And you know what? The way they play on Blofeld in Kids Next Door is very like, ooh, you never see him. Yeah. Father. You never see him. The Delightful Children from Down the Lane. Oof, man. Okay, we got to stop because I'm about to, we're about to go on a rant.
We'll do an episode.
You want to talk nostalgic here. Like, holy crap.
You'll be the nostalgic and I'll be the novice.
The but anyways, we were talking about henchmen.
How I put that in those characters in my top 10 of henchmen.
And to interrupt you again, I'm sorry.
My
Lord. Come on, it's relevant. It's a very interesting dynamic between the two, because you can also see it hasn't dated well, because they're gay. Like, that's the whole point. They hold hands, and you can tell there's clearly that kind of like sexual tension, and that almost like dominant versus submissive one, like, or follower almost. Very culty, very like robotic. And you can tell it was based in like, look how cool like this straight guy is, and look how not cool these two gay dudes are. And it's like such a dated concept, obviously. But you could tell there was definitely that motivation behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And which contributes to, you know, the Bond risque nature, the
it's definitely
nature.
The first time that was portrayed or even hinted at in a Bond film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think almost to this day, other than in Skyfall. But that's very interesting.
Yeah.
And what was I going to say? See, you threw me off with your...
You
oh,
like
no, actually,
henchman, yeah.
No. And now I'm staying on your point, so I've already lost what I was talking about.
Right.
But who played Mr. Kid was played by Bruce Glover, father of Crispin Glover. I almost said Donald Glover. That would be not correct either. Crispin Glover. And... Bruce Glover had convinced Sean Connery that he was a homosexual. And this joke is going to date itself, too, because it was back in the 70s, and the world's a different place. And, as like a joke to himself, he convinced Sean Connery he was a homosexual. And it wasn't until years later he was on a flight, and he was caught flirting with a stewardess. And Sean Connery was on the flight, unbeknownst to Bruce Glover, and he just heard in a thick Scottish accent, "You son of a bitch. You liar."
That's funny.
Yeah,
wow.
This little story I found in my research.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Hey, what are the odds they'd be on that same flight together?
Yeah, right.
That's so funny.
Maybe they're going to a Bond convention. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Not Sean Connery.
Yeah.
Sean Connery did not want to do this film.
It shows.
Yeah, he wanted out back in You Only Live Twice. And, you know, in Honor Majesty's Secret Service, they did have a new Bond, George Lazenby.
Mm-hmm.
And he was offered to do this film and the next film. He signed a 3-picture deal. However, in between the filming of Honor Majesty's Secret Service, George Lazenby had an agent, and he kind of, not like warped his mind, but basically was like, hey, you know what, you're Bond, you can ask for this, you deserve more, you should get more money, you should do whatever you want, blah, blah, blah. So he did things his own way, he grew his hair out long, grew a beard, he, like, it was more of like that, what do you call it, like the Easy Rider, like, I don't want to say hippie, but like the hippie, like, fad, and he went to the world premiere of this James Bond movie looking like a scruffy dude, which is not what, obviously, they wanted for the new James Bond.
No.
And he was very hard to deal with. The fame kind of went to his head. And he himself, even though they offered, like, hey, let's do this movie, he refused. He's like, nah, I don't want to do this. I want to do other things. So he did. He left, and he kind of did fall into obscurity. He only did a couple movies, and it was only in his later years that he got more work, but they were typically as like a James Bond-esque character. He never really got famous. You know?
Well, it kind of sucks because it's like, I feel like nobody really tells actors this or warns them about it, but like if you sign on to be part of a franchise or, not a franchise, sorry, yeah, like a bigger, what do you got, like a Marvel movie type stuff. Like, is that what that's called, franchise? No.
Yeah. Like,
Like a, sure. If you sign on to stuff for something like that, that's it. That's like, that's who you are. That's who you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's going to be very difficult to move away from that character. So if you think like, oh, look, I'm such, I was about to swear again. I'm such a successful person right now. I bet I could do other stuff. It's like, hold on, hang on to this gig for as long as you can. And then when you're able to find a way to get into other stuff, because it's not a guaranteed thing. Like George Lazenby saying like, oh, I want to be, like I could do other stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you can't, this is what you're doing now. And I mean, this was like early days when like doing this kind of stuff wasn't as common as it is now. So no one could really warn him, I feel like, you know, this whole, like, you're not gonna be able to do much after this.
I mean, Honor Majesty's was like his first acting role ever. So I don't know why he felt like, you know, I don't need Bond.
It's like, yes, you do. Desperately so. You'd be nothing without him.
He desperately wanted that role. So it's very interesting. And maybe we'll talk more on that when we do Honor Majesty's Secret Service. So Eon Productions, they pursued who's going to be our new James Bond. And for some reason, I don't know. I think I know why. I've never really found this answer, but they wanted an American. And I think it had to do with just the Bond films were immensely successful in the United States. So they reached out to like Burt Reynolds. They've reached out to Adam West at the time, and they both turned it down for very similar reasons. One, they didn't want to sign up for like a multi-picture deal, and they felt James Bond should be British or European of sorts. And so they declined. Ultimately, they did cast, Gavin something. Damn it. He plays the love interest in Psycho. He got cast, but a producer or someone within the company, you know, just flat out was like, I'm not impressed, but also Bond just has to be British. So they kind of went back to what they were originally thinking. And because things were tight, you know, schedules and blah, 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 they're like, let's get Sean Connery. Offer him the moon and give it to him and bring him back. So at the time, they offered him the biggest actor's salary ever. In 1971, it was $1.2 million, which is kind of funny because that is a lot of money. But like you hear, like Robert Downey Jr. got offered like $70 million to play Iron Man or something like that. And whatever. Stuff like that. Anywho, and Sean Connery accepted the offer on, I guess, one or two conditions. The money, sure, but he donated it all to a charity, and he wanted a two-picture deal of, like, films that he, like, projects he wanted to make, not a Bond movie. So it's kind of guaranteed project work.
That's good.
Yeah, so he, yeah, It was, that's how he came back. So he didn't necessarily want to do it. He obviously didn't do it for the money. He yeah. negotiated a lot of money only to donate it to charity, which is great, but it's also kind of like, yeah, give me more. Give me more. Yeah, I'll do it. And then he does it.
It's
and
he's dance, like, monkey dance.
Yeah, get rid of this yeah. money.
The contract definitely didn't say anything about attitude, because I'm sure, this just seeing him on there, just on, like, I don't know, just acting and everything, you're like, God, dude, just, like, quit pulling your punches, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
He seemed to, from, like, behind-the-scenes stuff, he seemed to have a lot of fun making this movie. They mm-hmm. shot it in Vegas, and apparently he played a lot of golf. He, partied all night, and throughout the production, he dated both, what's her name? Not Natalie Wood, Lana Wood, who played Plenty O'Toole. Lana Wood, and he also dated Jill St. John, who played Tiffany Case.
Wow.
So he was just...
having a good time.
He didn't sleep.
Which I'm sure was a pain in the ass for everybody else. Wouldn't be surprised.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how Sean Connery came back aboard. And I remembered my thought. Mr. Went, Mr. Kid, top 10 henchmen. Tiffany Case, she might be in my top 10 Bond girls.
Really?
Maybe.
Oh.
Maybe.
Why?
I don't know. I just like the personality, some of the lines.
She, to me, this is the best way I can describe her. She seemed like she was supposed to hold a purse that entire movie. Just, put it down. Stop. Calm down. You're fine. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, so apparently I'm going to be doing a 20 to life or something. Like, it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. You were smuggling diamonds and killed people. Yeah. Well, you've answered that question. Worry about that later.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just not for me.
You know what? Blow up your pants.
Nice. I did like that line. That was a good line.
Keep laying on that Tudor, Charlie. You're going to get a shot in the mouth. I don't know. Stuff like that. Mm. I'll review it and I'll be like, nah, never mind. No, she's not in there.
Yeah.
when I got them all like lined up, I'll be like, maybe
she's
not.
She's kind of forgettable. I don't know. There's something, again, seemed like she was holding a purse. She had to hold a purse the whole time, something like that.
So I've kind of ranted and raved and criticized and praised this movie here and there. Well, what are your, like, overall thoughts? Because you've never seen this.
I'm so unimpressed. It was fun to watch, like, coming out of it. I don't remember anything about it. Very unmemorable. Sean Connery's performance was very generic. Nothing outstanding. Even, like, the delivery of the lines, like, there's something I'd like you to get off your chest. Like, even his, like, the first scene before the opening credits, he was just, like, it looked like he kind of just wandered on set. And they were, like, feeding him lines. Like, it's nothing about it seemed like anybody wanted to be there. The dynamics were odd. The characters didn't seem to mesh together, in my opinion. They were, independently, they were fine. But as a whole, I was like, what? Like, where does this make sense? You know? Mm-hmm. Like, it seemed like nobody had a backstory at all. Nobody had any motivation to be there. Except for, I'm the bad guy. I need to be the bad guy. I'm the good guy. I need to be the good guy. It was fun. Whatever, I like the ending on the ship when, like, they're going in the Bombay Surprise. Like, that whole scene, that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
When he, like, grabbed one of the henchmen from his arms in through his legs, and he, like, flipped him into the water. I was like, that was probably the biggest stunt second to the car in this entire movie. It was unimpressive. It was thoroughly unimpressive. And I think I did say I liked it when we finished watching it, but, like, I don't remember liking it. That's the problem.
I asked you. I was like, so what did you think? You're like, eh.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad it's consistent. Yeah. Nothing impressive about it. I don't remember the plot. The opening credits was I love one of my favorites for sure. This is something I think I wanted to say while they were going, but I was like, I'll just save this. I don't like jewelry at all. I don't have my ears pierced. I never wear jewelry. I don't own any jewelry. And I've never thought it looked good. I've never thought it looked good. It always gave me this like uneasiness seeing jewelry on people, stuff going through your ears. You know, I mean, we have our wedding ring, but that's like intentional. There's like a reason to have it. Mm-hmm. That's like pretty, you know, in my opinion, very, very, very important. Now, if there is like a religious symbol on your body, like a cross, or, you know, if you have, you know, the Buddhist beads, I don't know what they're called, but you know, those kinds of bracelets and stuff. I have no, what do you call it? I have no qualm with that. It doesn't give me any kind of reaction or anything. But when I see like diamonds and gems and stuff like that, like metal on a skin hanging or something, it gives me this like uneasiness. It always has. Mm. And so watching the opening credits and seeing these women covered in jewelry, it gave me that uneasiness. But I was kind of into it in that moment because it was like, it was eerie. There was something about it that like it prompted a reaction out of me that was unexpected. And I thought that was really cool. But I knew what the intention was, and I thought it was, I don't know, I just, I enjoyed having that kind of relationship with mm-hmm. the opening credits, because I just, I've never liked the look of jewelry on people, so when people show me, sorry, I keep knocking the microphone, if people show me their rings and stuff, I don't like it. I just, to me, it kind of grosses me out. I just don't like seeing human skin getting, like, you know, because I can see it can be kind of shiny underneath the your body oils and stuff is like interacting with it. I've never liked it. To me, it's like dirty. Mm-hmm. That rubs people the wrong way. So obviously I will always pretend to like your jewelry. And if anyone I know is listening to this now and you're like, oh, she probably did really like that necklace. I didn't. I don't like anyone's jewelry, but I will always say that looks great because people wear it to look good and I don't care and it's no skin off my ass. So yeah, just seeing that opening credit scene, it was just women, that was the entire thing, was women covered in jewelry and diamonds, and it was eerie for me, it was unsettling, there is so much going on about it that I really enjoyed, and it kind of, but I didn't, it set a precedent of like, oh, you might enjoy this movie, and then I didn't, and I was like, fuck, I'm like, this
I sucks. Mean, yeah, like, that opening title sequence is a classic. You got mm-hmm. the song, Diamonds Are Forever, by that damn Shirley Bassey, and yeah, it's one of the better songs, if you ask me. But I'm glad you used the word eerie. Now, you used it in a different context, or I suppose, or for a different reason. I've always felt that way about this song. It is beautiful. It's grandiose, but at the beginning and kind of underlaying throughout it, it's I don't know what the instrument is. It might be a piano or something. It's like boom, 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 doo, 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 doo. I've always felt strange hearing that. Ooh,
feels like
diamonds are forever.
It feels like a cat going like up to no good, like the Siamese cats that are about to mess with the baby in Lady and the Tramp. That's what it reminds me of. It's uneasy. You're like, what's going to happen? What are you going to do? But nothing bad's going to happen. They're cats. What are they going to do to the baby?
They're diamonds. What are they going
to
do? Diamonds.
Yeah, what are they going to do to the lady? You know? So, yeah.
This is the song that when the lyrics were being described to Shirley Bassey, he was like, whoever wrote it was saying, sing the song as if you're talking about a penis. I've mentioned that for a different song. It's this one. Diamonds are forever.
Oh, that's ruined.
They're all I need to please me. Oh. They can stimulate and tease me. They won't leave in the night. I've no fear that they
might. Man, men at the time had no idea how freaking nasty a dick was. Like, god damn. Oh, my Lord.
It's like a diamond.
Well, that man had a lot of confidence in his own junk to assume that she would be like, oh, nice. Yeah, let's, that's perfect. That's all I think about. Ooh, how exciting. Like, gross, dude. That's wild that he said that to her.
Yeah.
It was a different time, but she probably went, ugh, and then thought of something else, because there's no way in
like
hell.
Like, maybe diamonds or something.
Because she was, yeah, exactly. She was probably thinking of something she liked, and that's something that titillated her or whatever. Maybe it was said apparatus, but it probably wasn't, and as she's singing, he's probably like, yeah, she's thinking about it. Like, oh, gross. Sorry. That grosses me out. That totally ruins the song for me.
You know,
which is fine. I had no emotional attachment to it.
Another reason that this movie has been, like, in a weird, like, I didn't like it, I criticized it kind of thing, is even before the theme song, the opening scene. Because this movie takes place right after Honor Majesty's Secret Service, I won't get into the events, but something happens at the end of that movie that, you know, you come into this one, like, Bond's looking for Blofeld. He's hunting him down. Where's Blofeld? Kind of thing. He's on a, like, revenge path. And he finds him in the opening sequence, you know, kills him, or so we think. But it's very, like, I don't know, compared to, like, what it's leading from, very anticlimactic. And then it just, like, kind of moves on. Like, you know, whatever happened at the end of the last movie, it doesn't really matter. Now, are these movies canonical or, like, sequels? They don't have to be. But at this time, a lot of people were meant to think that. This could also be a direct continuation of You Only Live Twice, which you and I talked about in the show, Sean Connery's previous final film, where he fights Blofeld in a volcano lair, but Blofeld escapes. So maybe it's the continuation of that. Like, where's Blofeld? I have to find him and defeat him. But yeah, so, like, I was just kind of always, like, felt a little flat by this movie, because I was like, oh, this is, like, picking up where the last one left off, but it just...
But then it doesn't. That's not, the thing. It's really just the opening scene that does it.
Yeah.
And then they stop and they're like, oh, now we're doing something different.
Now there's diamonds and satellites.
If you're going to start a movie with an objective, you follow through with that objective. They just completely changed it, like, not even halfway. Like, at the beginning, it was, oh, so bad. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was, just forgettable. I guess the henchmen were really the only thing that I was, like, kind of into.
They're the standouts.
They're different. They're very different. And the fact that there is that, you know, I guess, like, parallel with Codename Kiss Next Door. That was really the only thing that got me into it.
Sure.
Or walking away from it. That was the only thing I kind of, like, stuck out to me. That's it. That's really... And if I didn't have that connection with the cartoon from my childhood, then I don't think it would have struck me. I probably would have been like, how dare they depict men, you know, blah, 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 whatever. Like, gotten on my, you know, gotten all on in a tizzy about it.
Speaking of connections, the reason we pick this particular movie, because we're not going in a certain order, we're just kind of going by what we're feeling, or maybe this, maybe that. The reason we picked this one is because you took a business trip to Las Vegas.
That's right.
Where, like, this main location is in this film is 1970s Las Vegas.
And you know what?
How to compare.
Oh, that's, I was thinking that's what I wanted to talk about was Vegas, the way that it was depicted in the movie was cozy. And not classy, but there's a sophistication about it. There's like a nice like aura to it. It's black with like, you know, pops of color and like, you know, hey, very inviting. Come on over here. And even if this is a little sleazy and sketchy,
smoke cigarettes and gamble.
Yeah, smoke a, you know, light a cigarette, you know. And it's everything that Vegas isn't. It's not how they depicted it. And Vegas was fun. It was very, very fun. I was there for work, so it was very different, but it didn't look cozy. It didn't look like that. Now there's, you know, actually we were on a rooftop, not even rooftop, but we were on in like a bar that was like outside and you could overlook the strip and there was a CVS and it was funny because like the CVS had chaser lights, like, you know, the lights that go like, that. If the CVS had chaser lights, it doesn't need that. You know what I mean? There's... Everything's like in your face, bah, 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 bah. You know, you get a beacon of light, this whole city. It was super fun and it was great, but it's nothing like in the movie where it's like, you know, light a cigarette and like maybe you'll meet somebody, huh? You know, like that kind of stuff. So very different, but it was very cool seeing the two different. Like, there, what am I trying to say here? I can appreciate both depictions. I like the coziness that Diamonds Are Forever gave Vegas, and I like the hustle and bustle and mess that Vegas is and the overstimulating nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I can't talk too much about it because it is work-related, so,
sure.
You know,
obviously.
Yeah, but I feel like we would really enjoy going. Well, first off, we should definitely take a trip out there, maybe for WrestleMania next year, but with that, it would... Sorry, I thought you were biting your thumb or something, but you're scratching. It's different. Very different.
So,
I mean, Vegas is constantly changing.
I was just going to say, you know, what we saw in this movie was from the 70s. Mm-hmm. Here we are in 2024 currently. And
yeah, I'm not even comparing them, well, really.
What I was going to say is the Vegas we see in the movie is still existing, but it's called Old Vegas, I believe. Like, this is to my knowledge, Old Vegas. So where you weren't where that area is. So that's where the Old Vegas is. And over time, they've just like, hey, let's make new stuff over here. So Old Vegas is still there. Like, it's just what Vegas used to be. They just built like a whole new, let's push it somewhere else. Yeah. And it's pretty rough, apparently.
Oh,
like,
really?
That's like the rough area, from what I understand.
They
just like, over the past many decades, are like, well, let's get away from that, leave that here, but we're just going to build a whole new thing
over here.
So that's where Vegas is now, like where you were.
That makes a lot of sense. That's super funny that they did that. Oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know what? If we had watched this movie before I went to Vegas, I feel like I would have made that connection more. I would have been like more like, ooh, well, you know, what do I see in the movies versus like in real life and stuff? Where are the parallels? Obviously, like I said, different time period, different area, whatever. Well, I didn't know it was a different area, but yeah, I'm definitely not comparing the two. Mm-hmm. But the way if they were to remake this movie with the present day Vegas, it wouldn't look like that 100%. Yeah, but it's cool seeing it. It's like a little time capsule of like, what was Vegas like?
You know?
So
I like the way you put it too, because when I think of like Vegas like that, I do find it to be cozy in that, like Frank Sinatra,
yes,
or like Dean Martin, you know, like Rat Pack, like we're gonna smoke cigarettes and listen to the lounge singer.
Yeah,
like,
when you lose, you're not upset. You're just like, you know, another day, another loss, like that kind of stuff. Like, yeah. And then you go smoke at the bar and like, or smoke at the bar, drink at the bar,
and smoke everywhere.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, there was a lot of that too. But now it's like, you know, just old people at slots, you know. So it was an interesting parallel, but yeah, otherwise
probably my favorite scene in this movie is when Bond steps out of his window and stands on an elevator and goes up to the top of this building. He's like trying to infiltrate this character named Willard White's office, and he shoots these like grappling hooks, and he kind of does this like suspension swing to get up onto the roof. And I pointed out to you, that's my favorite scene in this movie, but I pointed out to you, like, oh, you were just there. And you and I both were like, oh, this looks so nice. And you were saying, like, how you wanted me to go there with you and experience, like, that experience together. But so it was just kind of like a nice little visual. Now I have a moment to, like, enjoy in this movie. That was already my favorite scene, but I'll always remember, like, pointing that out to you and be like, hey, you were just there.
That's
and then
so
you
nice.
Being like, oh, I want to go back with you kind of thing.
Yeah, and then the movie kept sucking. No.
It kind of does, because then we get introduced. Well, we already got introduced, but we get reintroduced to Blofeld.
Yeah.
And this is my least favorite portrayal of the character by Charles Gray.
Yeah.
And
there's four of us, like,
he's like making like clones of himself, essentially not clones, but like hiring actors.
Yeah, stupid. That could have just not been in the movie.
Yeah, it really,
and it would have been fine.
It's to like, it was supposed to be a surprise, I'm assuming. Like, oh, he killed Blofeld at the beginning, and then he's dead. But then he shows up later, and you're like, how is this possible? He's like, 007, I've been making doubles of myself.
Yeah, there's like a better explanation that they could have come up with that seemed a little like, man, we really want to have some clones in a movie. And they're like, just throw it in the Bond movie. Like, okay. Like, it was sloppy. It was lazy. I didn't like it at all. And they just kind of walk on, and he's like, wasn't he shooting at them?
Probably.
I don't
remember. Like a pop gun. He's got little cigarette holder, like the Penguin. He's like, wah, wah.
Yeah, it was bad.
So with Blofeld, the classic James Bond villain, you know, for a long time, it was just the hand stroking the cat with like a deep, menacing voice. Then we finally get to visually see him in You Only Live Twice, played by Donald Pleasance. And he's got that Dr. Evil scar and the bald head, and he never blinks, he just stares, and he's very intimidating in that way. But then in Honor Majesties, you get Telly Savalas, who plays him more sophisticated, but he is intimidating, though. He makes a threat, and he's like, He's got this like deep voice. He's like, I say what I mean, and I mean what I say. And then we get Charles Gray, who's just more sophisticated, more, I don't know what the word would be.
There's like more than one of me. You're like, okay.
Yeah, proper English, and I have those doubles on me, 007. and I just don't like that portrayal.
No, it sucked. I didn't even register it as Blofeld when he, like, I think someone's like, Blofeld, or something. Who would it have been? Bond.
Welcome to hell, Blofeld.
And, like, I was like, oh, that's Blofeld. Oh, okay. It just seemed so, like, the throwaway bad guy. It seemed like we just needed a bad guy. I'm like, that's the villain. That's the big guy. You've been looking for this guy. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, there's one of me. Two, three, four. How many can you count? You know, it's like, just, what are you?
Don't go through that door, 007. There's 3,000 of me in there. You're going to have your hands full. That doesn't happen.
No, they might as well have
it. He would have been better.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah, that was kind of disappointing.
When they were getting ready to make this movie, because it has nothing to do with the book itself, nothing really, they were getting Sean Connery back. They brought Guy Hamilton, who's directed a few other Bond films. They were going to make this one more of a sequel to Goldfinger. The plan was to have Gert Frobe, who played Goldfinger, return to play Goldfinger's twin brother. And it was just going to be essentially the same plot, but with diamonds. Oh, and not the same plot as Goldfinger, but the same plot as Diamonds Are Forever, but not Blofeld, but like Benjamin Goldfinger. I don't know.
What?
Not Auric Goldfinger, but his brother.
I'm so confused. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Exactly. And they decided not to go that route and mm-hmm. had Blofeld instead.
Stupid. Regardless, stupid.
Yeah. I don't know. It probably wouldn't have been too great. It would have just been like trying to too obviously try to recapture that old glory, you know. Yeah. Got Sean Connery, got Guy Hamilton, who directed Goldfinger. He got Goldfinger back, sort of, but it's a unknown twin brother.
So was this Sean Connery's last?
This was Sean Connery's last until 1983,
non... Oh, yeah, we don't talk about
never,
that.
Yeah,
we
don't never talk say about never that again.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to ask me, outside of this podcast, have I seen all the Sean Connerys now?
Have you? No. Yeah, yes.
Doctor No.
Have you seen Doctor No?
Yep. Goldfinger. You Only Live Twice. Diamonds Are Forever. I'm missing one. From Russia with Love.
And Thunderball.
And Thunderball. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, I've seen all of them.
Damn.
This feels anticlimactic. Should have been more of a hoopla.
Because I don't know if you finished Doctor No. We've started it a bunch of times.
I watched it. I can't remember it because I was very tired. You kept waking me up, which kind of is good.
That's
it's like Casino Royale, like technically, like, you know.
Yeah. Well,
if you know a good squeeze lore, you know that I fell asleep during watching Casino Royale for the first time. I've seen it in its entirety at this point. It's in my top five, but...
And we'll do Doctor No on the show.
Yeah.
And
same story.
And you will do Thunderball for sure on the show. And we're gonna do them all. Don't worry.
Of course. Oh yeah. Yeah.
But you are sort of right. You have finished all the Sean Connerys, so you deserve a treat.
It's me snapping an applause. Sorry. Like a crab. I do deserve a treat, and we will be getting dessert.
That's right. Any closing thoughts, though?
Closing thoughts?
Oh, we were talking earlier, and we'll just close real quick. There's this really impressive car. Well, not the car chase isn't too impressive, but there's an impressive stunt where the car
yes.
flips on two wheels and just slides through a thin alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a continuity error. Would you like to attempt?
Oh, because I'm gonna get mad.
They go in one direction, but when they, you know, you're filming one angle, then they take the camera and go to the other side of the alley, and they had the car come out, but they messed up the continuity, so the car goes in one direction, and when it comes out, it's flipped on the other two tires.
And they even filmed it, like, inside the car. they angled it the wrong way. So I don't know which side they were trying to do. Like,
yeah, they try to fix it in that shot.
That's what it was. Where
they're tilted the way it goes in, but then the camera tilts the other direction. So you're supposed to think they flip in this like tight alley.
It was poorly done. And if they were trying to, I don't even think I would have noticed the continuity error if they maintained the shot, the proper direction of when it went in. When it went in the alley and when they shot inside the car. If they had maintained that, I wouldn't have figured out that the car was facing the wrong way. Yeah. I wouldn't have, because it just, all of a sudden, just felt like they switched the camera. Like, it was so abrupt. It was so bad. And immediately I was like, oh, fuck this movie. God damn it. Like, can't even get the car right.
And that's the kind of stuff I mean. Like, when I, growing up, I've already explained that, but when I was more critical in my 20s, I was like, sloppy. Yeah. I don't like it. Now I'm like, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's fun. Okay, I will say this movie was fun. It was fun to make fun of. It was fun to, we had a good experience watching it. Obviously, I feel like we have such a wonderful environment that you tailor for us while we're watching these movies. We have our own, you know, we riff, you know, during the movies and all that. But, you know, without that, I don't think I would have enjoyed it, period. But with that, I did walk away with like a good movie watching experience, which is important. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point of a good squeeze here. We're trying to have fun. And at the end of the day, whoever has fun is the winner, right? So,
any,
how about you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, any closing thoughts? I guess those were closing thoughts.
That was my closing thought. How about you?
My closing thought is very similar to my opening thought. This movie is flawed.
Mm-hmm.
It is messy. It is silly. It's overall, I don't want to say it is a little boring. It's confusing. And it's all over the place. But for all those same reasons, I've been enjoying it more and more for what it is, and it's still very low in my ranking. However, it's pizza, you know, like
they're all pizza. You used that analogy last time.
Yes, but there is good pizza and then there's bad pizza, but even bad pizza is good.
Ooh, up for debate. Leave a comment.
So like my favorite GoldenEye is like the best like Pittsburgh pizza. What's our like
the best Pittsburgh pizza? That only makes sense. That only makes sense to people who live in Pittsburgh.
Well, we're a Pittsburgh based show.
Because if you say that to somebody who's not from Pittsburgh, they're like, Pittsburgh pizza, like cigarette butts on dough. Like, I don't
they
know
put what. Fries and coleslaw on that too.
They don't even know about that. That's how little known Pittsburgh cuisine is known. Pittsburgh pizza is delicious. We just have to say it. I'll take that to my grave.
Times Magazine. I'm pretty sure they voted Pittsburgh like the second best city for pizza. Apparently,
that's right.
But regardless, maybe whatever New York.
Just to give some context to all six of our non-Pittsburgh listeners. So
you got the best pizza, in my opinion, and then like Diamonds Are Forever is like, I don't know, like a DiGiorno.
All
you know,
right.
Like a freezer pizza, like you put it in, it's like, it's pretty, you know, it's whatever.
Okay. All right.
A little cardboard tasting.
Well, you know, this actually leads into, because I'm like, for me, I'm like, oh, I disagree. There's like, you know, you could eat your dog's food, Diamonds Are Forever, or you could get a real meal, other movies. But this leads us into, perfect segue into our verdict. Does this belong to the nostalgic or is it for the novice?
Oh, this is certainly for the nostalgic, and it might not even be for them.
Yeah.
most people in the fandom have this very low.
This might be our Good Squeeze exclusive where it's neither. No one wants it. I will stick with you on the nostalgic or neither if we want to add that as a category. Let us know, you know? Nostalgic for sure for the nostalgic. And the very nostalgic. Emphasis, capital N, capital C. Nostalgic.
Yeah, I think I said this with Living Daylights. Like, this would be one, if I'm, like, introducing someone to Bond, this movie's nowhere near it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm showing someone every single one of these, which is, I'm going to sound like a liar because I'm doing this with you, but in general, if it was like, so-and-so needs to watch every Bond movie, here's the order, whatever. This would be near the bottom also, in my opinion. but
I would just tell him, no, that never came out. Didn't exist. What are you talking about? No, there's no such there's no such movie. You are wrong. And then, yeah, just move on.
Yeah.
Did not like that movie. Anyways. But yeah, so on that note, find us on Instagram, A Good Squeeze, where we have updates and, you know, lifestyle videos. Very, very short lifestyle videos, but it's usually us setting up the mood for the movie watching experience. Gives you some insider view on what A Good Squeeze is about, and where we post updates and such about our life too, if you want to sneak a peek. That's about that in social media. That's about as much as we're gonna do.
And then you know, if you want to listen to us, hey, if you're already are, you already are. But if you want to share it around, Audio Boom is our main hub. Then it branches out from there. We're on things like Spotify and Google Play, Apple Podcasts, things like that. Wherever you find your podcasts, we're there.
That's right. On that note, I'm Margo.
And I'm August.
And this has been
A Good Squeeze, A Good Squeeze, A Good Squeeze. Forever, forever.
Oh, I was like, what are you doing? Forever. I follow. It takes me a minute to get there, but I get there. Thank you.